There it is.
It's 128.
Slide 63.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
That you've been, you're gonna have to leave, but you were looking ahead.
If that be
possible. No.
Okay. Today's May 12, 2015. This is a Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources. Today is a continuation of the public hearing on Senate Bill 5511. So we'll go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5511 and call up Director Melcher. And before we begin, I was talking with Senator Hansel before he has to leave at around 9 o'clock for a scheduled meeting. But he had a few questions on one of the POPs, and so I thought we might have you talk about that POP really quickly, and then Senator Hansel had a few questions about that. So.
Okay.
And Senator Hansel, which POP number was it?
POP 128.
And so
slide 63, I believe.
Yep, got it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. So we'll talk here about POP 128, which is a Lower Deschutes River Ranch acquisition. This is an acquisition of about approximately 10,000 acres on the Lower Deschutes. It's we've been through, we were at the E-Board in May of 2014 requesting approval to apply for federal grants associated with this acquisition. The property contains key habitats for sensitive species as well as big game species. We've worked through the local Wasco County Commission and secured unanimous support from them for this property acquisition. It provides important access to the west side of the Deschutes public access. It adjoins or is adjacent to our Lower Deschutes Wildlife Area and also very close to our White River Wildlife Area. We have the request here is for limitation associated with about $1.2 million of federal funds. Those would be Pittman Robertson funds that we received from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And it's married up with funding from the Ruby Pipeline mitigation. So back in about, I believe it was about 2010, we worked on the Ruby Pipeline project across Southeast Oregon. Part of that project included funding for, part of the mitigation for that project included funding for acquisition of wildlife habitat. And so there's about $1 million of mitigation dollars available from that particular project that would be used on this acquisition. Additionally, about $660,000 of private funds have been committed to the project, both from the Foundation for North American Wild Sheep as well as from Trust for Public Land.
Great, thank you. And Senator Hansel, did you have a...
Yeah, can we go to that slide?
I'm going to be previewing my entire presentation for this.
I'm impressed with how quickly you got there.
Kurt, I've got a few questions, if I might, Mr. Chair.
Oh, absolutely, please.
And I've got to leave at 9, so I apologize for getting you out of sequence here.
No problem.
It's my understanding neighboring farmers and ranchers are opposed to this acquisition due to concerns about the impact on their farms and ranches. Are you aware of this opposition, and what have you done to mitigate it?
Sure. Chair Rayfield and Senator Hansel, our local staff has worked closely in the community with neighboring property owners. I understand there may be some that now are opposed, but at least until very recently, they had not expressed that opposition to us. So we're working with them. We certainly, assuming the acquisition goes forward, we'll continue to work with them to make sure that the project meets their needs as adjacent or adjoining landowners. And we are sensitive to those issues. I think one of the important things for us, grazing is an important management tool, and so we'll continue to have private grazing on this property in the future.
Are you confident that you have the resources to adequately manage this? I mean, we're looking at your budget, and of all the natural resource budgets, we've got among the most challenges here, and yet we're going out and acquiring another 10,000 acres of land to manage. when we're in real tight budget situations where we're raising fees and proposing all of that, is this, it just seems to me to be a bit of a disconnect on. On one hand, we don't have enough money to do what we're doing, and now we're using special grant funds and stuff, but the management of it later on.
Sure. Chair Rayfield and Senator Hansel, we have, of course, we're not using any license dollars on the actual acquisition. However, we do have staff, and we do manage the Lower Deschutes Wildlife Area already, as well as the White River Wildlife Management Area in close proximity. So we will be using existing staff, and then existing or additional federal resources through the Pittman-Robertson in terms of ongoing maintenance activities, addressing invasive species, providing access.
So what I'm hearing you say is that there'll be no additional expenditures necessary in the budget to manage this new 10,000 acres?
Sure. Chair Rayfield and Senator Hansel, I think in the future we would perhaps use some small amount of our federal PR Pittman-Robertson allocation for additional management activities, but not license funded.
Well, I understand not license, but I mean you're going for general fund monies now, and okay.
And I think maybe the question, the follow-up might be, if you're using the federal funds, where the federal funds could be used elsewhere, does that lessen the amount of general fund that you might have available for other projects? Is that
well sure. put? Thank you.
Sure. And Co-Chair Rayfield, I think as it relates to these Pittman-Robertson funds, our ability to use them is fairly narrowly defined, you know, in terms of wildlife programs, not fish programs. And I would add that we have generally tried not to put permanent staff on Pittman-Robertson funds simply because the trajectory for that particular revenue source may decline. It's associated almost entirely with the purchase of arms and ammunition. So as those purchases ebb and flow, given political pressures or political issues, we are expecting that fund source would decline. So we've been reticent to put permanent staff on those funds.
One last follow-up. And as far as you know, currently the Wasco County Board of Commissioners are in favor of this. You've not heard anything different from them.
Co-Chair Rayfield and Senator Hansel, no. We have a unanimous letter of support from the Wasco County Commission. We've also, of course, worked with Representative Smith. This property is in his district. And at least to date, the Wasco County Commission has been fully supportive of this acquisition.
Just to remind you that if it's in Representative Smith's district, it's also in mine.
Very good. Thanks.
All right. One bird or the other.
Any other questions on this, Pop? Okay. Well, let's scoot all the way back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, then, beginning the presentation for the morning. We were asked to, at a very high level, discuss the differences between our commission-adopted agency-recommended budget and the governor's recommended budget, which was delivered here to the legislature. There were some slight differences, and I'll just highlight those here now. As it relates to the fee increases proposed in the agency-recommended budget, they were slightly lower than those in the governor's recommended budget. You'll see our ARB included $8.5 million worth of new fee revenues, whereas the GRB included $9.3 million of additional fee revenues. Those increases all occurred on the wildlife side, so they were all hunting-related fee increases. The agency request budget, which was approved by the commission, included $6.3 million worth of program reductions, and the governor's recommended budget included $7.4 million worth of program reductions. And then lastly, where the commission adopted agency recommended budget included $13.6 million worth of fund shifts, the governor's recommended budget included $11.8 million of fund shifts, the difference being the level of general fund support for the agency. So there was approximately $2 million additional general fund in the agency request budget versus the governor's recommended budget. So looking at that, not in a pie chart, but just in a tabular form, you'll see that our, and we show here our 13-15 legislatively adopted budget totals $343 million. The agency request budget was $357 million, and the governor's recommended budget for 2015-17 was $345 million. Again, the difference being less general fund support for the agency activities, significantly less lottery, so about $2 million less lottery in the governor's recommended budget versus the agency request budget, and then slightly higher fee revenue, as you'll see in the federal funds budget with the, or excuse me, the other funds budget, with the federal fund budget being largely flat. So I want to talk here a little bit about our 070 reduction package, but before I do that, I want to talk also, or I want to talk a little bit about where and how our license dollars are spent. So these pie charts show for a single fishing license dollar or a single hunting license dollar how those dollars are spent across the agency's programs. You'll see that the vast majority of these resources are spent in field programs. On the fish side, those would also include hatcheries. Basically 15% or 15 cents on the dollar in administration. And on the enforcement side, 28% of the wildlife hunting related dollars being spent on enforcement, and 20% or 20 cents of every dollar being spent on enforcement on the fish side. And this proportion is based on the proportion of work that OSP troopers do. They spend more of their time working on wildlife related cases than on fish related cases. And then I want to talk in this graph, there's a lot of details here, but I want to just talk at a very high level that about where the dollars are spent. So for our license dollars, hunting and fishing license dollars, you'll see by watershed, and there's 10 major watersheds here. You'll see by watershed where our license dollars are spent. They're spent throughout the state in these field programs. You'll see the headquarters pie chart is roughly similar in size to many of these watersheds in terms of how and where we spend license dollars. And then in addition to the 10 watersheds, we do spend some license dollars in our Columbia program, managing the Columbia River commercial, recreational, and tribal fisheries, as well as some license dollars spent in our marine program, again, managing marine recreational fisheries. And I should correct my comment on the Columbia. These are license dollars being used on managing recreational license or recreational fisheries in the Columbia. So broadly distributed across the state. So then I want to move into our 070 package. And I think it's important for context, and I know we talked about this yesterday as well as in our earlier phase one process, that our 070 package is much bigger than what we're proposing to buy back through the fee bill or Senate Bill 247. So, in fact, the 070 package totals about 90 positions or a little over 90 positions in the agency, license-funded positions. We are not proposing for the majority of those to be reinstated. We, in fact, are expecting 50 of those positions to be eliminated in putting ourselves on a more sustainable trajectory in the future. And then POP 102, which is associated with our fee, our recreational fishing and hunting, as well as commercial and shellfish license-funded programs, POP 102 restores the agency's priority programs. All of those, though, are encompassed in the 070 reduction package. Absent POP 102 or the revenue associated with POP 102, the department would either need other revenue or program reductions to balance our budget for 15-17. Additionally, one additional complexity in all of this is, as we talked about, the Pittman-Robertson and the sport fish restoration dollars that come to us from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they do require match. And as our license dollars continue to decline, or if they were to decline under any budget scenario, it does cause complexities with us achieving that match. So going into some...
Kurt, can I just ask, you know, when you say if 102 is not funded, is there a difference if it's funded all up front or phased in? Does that make a difference in the impact?
Sure. Chair Rayfield and Senator Dembrow, no. The whether it's phased in or our fees are all adjusted up front, it does not affect our match piece. So as we proposed here, it's a 6-year, every other year funding structure. If that was to be changed into a move all the fee increases to the front and go back to our old model, which was one large increase that holds stable, it does not have an impact on the match piece. So then in talking about specific reductions, if POP 102 is not approved, we would have $9,150,000 worth of program reductions. It affects in entirety 42 positions, includes, and we'll go into some details on each of these, 2 hatcheries, Oregon Hatchery Research Center, private trout purchases from private aquaculture producers, reductions in Fish and Wildlife headquarters as well as regional staff, some additional reductions in administration, although it's important to note that we took quite large reductions in our in the administrative side in our piece of the reduction package that we're not proposing to buy back. And then lastly, a proportional reduction in our support for OSP Fish and Wildlife Enforcement, and that that would equate to about $2.1 million or five troopers.
Yes, Representative Gomberg.
Morning, Director. I know later on that you talk about the specifics in terms of the number of positions that these closures will entail, but tell me a little bit about what you see as the long-term consequence of closing the Hatchery Research Center.
Sure. I'm Chair Rayfield and Representative Gomberg. I think, you know, the Hatchery Research Center for us is important in trying to answer many of the critical questions as it relates to hatchery fish and wild fish in our watersheds. And I want to make it clear that, none of these programs are programs that we're advocating and wanting to eliminate, but they are, when you look at where we spend our license dollars and in trying to maintain the core mission of the agency, managing fish and wildlife, we picked these particulars. There's probably, there's hundreds of permutations that we could go into with other facilities for closure. So the Hatchery Research Center is important. It's important to answering those long-term questions. We do actually have a bill, and I don't recall the bill number right now, which would include an additional surcharge on angling licenses and additional commercial fishing fees to help not fund the base operation of the Hatchery Research Center, but fund expanded research, and we've supported that. So it's an important piece of the puzzle over the long term if we're going to have hatchery fish.
Just a follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what I heard you saying is that you'd like to get the money to keep this program either in here or through other means. If we close the center, do we have alternative means of acquiring what you called critical information?
Co-Chair Rayfield and Representative Gomberg, I think obviously there are other folks out there across the West doing research on salmon and hatchery influences, but we would have less control. Obviously, we would have no control over being able to direct and focus that work, which is our hope at the Hatchery Research Center, that we can actually focus that work on the critical questions to us as opposed to having to wait for somebody else to do that work.
Thank you.
Representative Hack.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Good morning. You talk about the reduction of other positions. Can you refresh my memory on how many of those other positions that you'll be reducing in addition to this outside of if this is
sure.
if the licensing fees aren't
sure we have and I know I have it in my I'll just do it from memory and then
okay.
correct myself if I need to, but as part of our 070 package, we have an additional 50 positions that are slated for elimination. They're not subject to buying back in POP 102. They are, if you'll remember, our pie chart where we were recommending filling one-third of our budget gap, roughly one-third of our budget gap with program reductions. Those are the 50 positions. We went through and strategically came up with those position reductions to not affect our core agency mission as well as to not affect hatchery production. So in those initial 50 positions slated for reduction, we maintained all of our hatchery production. We maintained our core district fish and wildlife staff and district structure. We did reorganize from four regions into two regions and eliminated two fairly high-level regional managers. We've been going through continuous process improvement actions, activities, and have, through those activities, been able to eliminate 10 positions in administration in headquarters. And I can dig out the list and go through each of the...
Kind of follow up?
Yeah.
So help me to wrap my head around this then. If we're eliminating over, you know, 50, around 50 positions, yet still needing additional dollars, how is it that you're eliminating 50 positions yet still coming back saying we're eliminating positions but we still need more money?
Chair Rayfield and Representative Hack, our current fee structure was adopted in 2009, and the fees have basically been unchanged for the last 6 years. So over that six-year span, as costs have continued to rise, and at that time in 2009, we projected that the fee structure would sustain agency programs through 2015, which they have done. As we came back then and looked at where we are now and projecting out the next 6 years, we project essentially a budget shortfall associated with increasing costs, you know, cost of personnel expenses, cost of supplies and services, cost of utilities, cost of fish feed. All those things have continued to inflate over the last 6 years. And so this is really the normal process as it relates to increasing fees to basically fill that budget gap and maintain priority programs.
Okay, I have another. And I'm bringing these about just because a lot of constituent feedback as it relates to the increase in fees, so I appreciate your responses. So how many positions do you have total?
Chair Rayfield and Representative Hack, agency-wide, I think FTEs were about 1,242. We have more position numbers than that because many, many of our positions are seasonal positions.
So out of that, between this and your other reductions, we're looking at almost 100 positions that you will do away with, so almost 10% of, so you'll have a 10% reduction in staff unless... 5% almost, well, a little less than 5% without the fee increase. And then in addition to that, you're going to lay off another 5%.
Chair Rayfield, Representative Hack, that's basically correct. And if you look at our agency budget, 13-15 legislatively approved versus the 15-17 proposed, the reason there is basically no change in the budget, it's really flat. And the reason that we can have a flat budget, if you will, over that two-year span is because we're proposing to reduce program, as you know, to cover inflation, essentially, if you will.
So in a sense, are you saying since the last fee increase you have incurred close to a 10% increase in cost of doing business, in a sense?
Co-chair Rayfield and Representative Hack, I don't think the math is quite that linear. If you look at our costs per biennium, I think they typically increase based on personnel costs and supplies and services and all the other factors. They typically increase 7 to 10% per biennium. Okay. And so over a six-year span, that's 21 to 30+%.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Yes, Senator Dimbrough.
Thanks. Kurt, could you say something about the private hatcheries? If we eliminate trout purchases from private hatcheries, what What is the cost of that? I mean, is that then made up by the public hatcheries, or what is the impact? And you know, to what extent is it better to go private as opposed to public?
Sure. Chair Rayfield and Senator Dembrow, the cost, if you will, to that, and I'm assuming you mean the opportunity cost, the cost to that is that we would do less stocking. So we would stock less trout in some of our water bodies. In terms of true dollars, we spend $400,000 per biennium on purchases from private aquaculture. We would not, under this budget proposal, under this reduction, we would not propose to backfill or increase production at other facilities to offset that. It would be, you know, it would be true cut reduction in the number of fish that are stocked. As it relates to, and the question about private aquaculture purchases versus raising them at our facilities, many of our facilities that produce trout in basically in excess where they have excess capacity. So it may be a federally funded mitigation hatchery where they have extra space, and for the cost of the feed, we're able to produce trout for our public stocking programs. And then we have a couple of hatcheries, several hatcheries that are full-on trout, state-funded trout hatcheries. So as far as the cost, you know, we could go round and round about the cost in a public facility versus the cost at a private facility, and there's been a lot of discussions of that in this building in previous sessions as well. Okay. So going into a little bit more of the details then, in the Wildlife Division, we would eliminate 6 technicians at district wildlife offices around the state. We would also, on the Wildlife Division side, eliminate 7 assistant district wildlife biologists, again, around the state. And if you think back to our graphic that shows where we spend these dollars, they're truly spent around the state.
And what do these positions do?
Well, on the assistant district biologists, we're organized into, I believe it's 20 wildlife districts across the state. Each district has a district biologist and an assistant. So these are the staff that work on a broad array of issues, ranging from wildlife damage. So when a landowner has damage issues and they call us to help them deal with their damage issues, these folks work on that. They work on habitat projects. They work on essentially managing our hunting seasons. So they do some of the field work associated with that. I could have Mr. Anglin come up and go into great depth on what our assistant district biologists do. They do some of the work that you're familiar with through House Bill 3315 in reviewing permitting processes for other agencies and government entities, as well as dealing with listed. You know, we have numerous terrestrial species that are either listed under the Endangered Species Act or proposed for listing, for instance, the Pacific Fisher, the Sierra Red Fox are currently both proposed for listing. Sage grouse, proposed for listing. They work on all those species as well.
So just to follow up on that, so what services will be lost by eliminating these? Are they in offices where there are several of them and the work will just have to be spread? Or is it going to involve having to, you know, merge offices?
Yeah. Co-Chair Rayfield and Senator Dembrow, we're not under the structure proposing closing any offices. So we're essentially saying some of our district biologists will not have an assistant. There's not a lot of ability to spread the work any further. So there will be things that either don't happen as quickly or do not happen.
Representative Gumberg.
Director, I just want to make sure I understand your answers to those questions. Are you answering directly to the Wildlife Division, or are you also including the 4 biologists planned to be cut from the Fish Division?
Co-Chair Rayfield and Representative Gomberg, I was discussing the Wildlife Division here, but the answer will be very similar on the fish side, but obviously not dealing with terrestrial species, but with fish species.
And let me ask a general question now about all these biologists. Same question I asked about the hatchery. What's the long-term consequences of losing these positions?
Sure. Representative or Co-Chair Rayfield and Representative Gomberg. Long-term, this means less responsiveness to wildlife damage complaints. This means less ability to survey and assess population status. This means less ability to serve our hunters when they come in the door. And for instance, we have mandatory checks for some species like cougars and bears. They're required to bring those to our district offices. So it means perhaps only scheduling certain times for those activities. It definitely means less service to the state's residents.
Thank you, Director.
Continuing on in the Wildlife Division, we have one remaining part-time volunteer coordinator in Corvallis, which we would eliminate, and then significant reductions in supplies and services associated with winter feeding. So we do feed wildlife on many of our wildlife areas during the winter months, and that is primarily to attract and keep wintering big game on our properties as opposed to on the neighboring private properties where they cause damage. It means less and probably slower response to wildlife damage issues at the regional and district level, less regional habitat work by these district staffs, as well as we're proposing to reduce support for our mule deer initiative work. And we've been working in a number of wildlife management units to, as I mentioned, I think talked about yesterday, to improve mule deer status through a variety of actions, including habitat management actions, addressing predators, and we will do less of that work. So then moving into the fish side, a whole host of positions and facilities scheduled for elimination. Reducing liberation position in Roseburg. This is essentially a full-time liberation truck driver who drives the fish liberation truck from hatcheries to release sites. Eliminate our administrative position in the fish division, rules coordinator. Here's where we talked on this a little bit earlier, reducing or actually eliminating the Oregon Hatchery Research Center, eliminating the North Santiam Summer Steelhead Program. This is not a facility. It's a program that is at our Lieberg hatchery, but would but requires additional staff and resources to operate. We talked about eliminating trout purchases from private hatcheries, closing two hatcheries. We would propose to close the Bandon hatchery, which is on the Coquille, and the Alsea hatchery, which is on the Alsea River. Moving then into the district, we have two district fish technicians and four assistant district fish biologists slated for elimination. Eliminating our water program, which is based in headquarters. Reducing to a degree our Columbia and Willamette River fishery monitoring programs. And then part of Senate Bill 247, of course, includes not just the recreational fishing and the hunting fees, but it also includes our commercial fee package as well as our shellfish fee package. The commercial fish and the shellfish packages are both obligated accounts. They have statutory limitations for how those resources can be spent. Nonetheless, they are part of the Senate Bill 247, so they are addressed in our both POP 102 and our 070 package. We would, absent the increase in the shellfish license fee, which, by the way, has not changed since 2003, it's been the same fee since 2003. We would reduce our shellfish program by eliminating one biologist and one field technician, experimental biologist aide, as well as reducing service and supplies. And then on the commercial fish side, again, another obligated account. This part of Senate Bill 247. We would eliminate a technical position that works with the Pacific Fishery Management Council on stock assessments. We do have a small contract with the Coastal Zone Management Association to provide some outreach as well as some economic analysis. We would eliminate that. Reduce our groundfish sampling to a degree, as well as reduce our nearshore groundfish program, and take some small reductions in our ongoing Columbia River selective gear research.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask about the commercial fish? So clarify for me, does POP 102, does it include the increases in the commercial fish fees? I think you may have just touched on that.
Chair Rayfield and Senator Denbrough, it does. POP 102, Senate Bill 247 includes both hunting, recreational fishing, commercial, and shellfish fee adjustments. And thus, POP 102 addresses all of those as well. And so our 070 package addresses all of those. Recognizing that there's a, you know, there's a wall, if you will, between each of those fund types, because the commercial fish and the shellfish are obligated accounts that we, you know, we couldn't just say, well, we're going to not reduce the fish hatchery program, we're going to shift shellfish funds. We couldn't do that under current statute.
Mm-hmm. But the other commercial fish fees, which you talked about yesterday, you know, the various permits,
yep,
you know, et cetera, will those rise anyway if that bill is not passed?
Co-Chair Rayfield and Senator Denbrough, if some bill is not passed, those will not rise. I think it really comes down to how Senate Bill 247 is amended, or if it all dies together or something comes back, that's a question here. But absent any action, those fees will not rise. They're all in statute.
So it's conceivable that we could increase those if those are acceptable to industry, for example, and then we could eliminate these eliminations. Is that right?
Chair Rayfield and Senator, that is absolutely correct. Moving on then, we did also include some additional reductions in our administrative programs, one accountant, one payroll position, as well as some supplies and services, as well as I mentioned earlier, reductions in the Oregon State Police enforcement contract. So on the license bullet, if you will, under the Oregon State Police, that would be about a $2.1 million reduction or five troopers. There is a small component of the commercial fish fund that is also directed to enforcement, so there's a small proportional reduction there. I believe it's about $50,000.
So what does this do for the long-term sustainability of the department? You know, so if you don't increase the license fees, and so you're short $9 million, you make $9 million in cuts this year, what happens in 2 years? What happens in 4 years? Eventually, you have to come back because the costs are going to continue to rise. Is that accurate?
Co-Chair Rayfield, that's absolutely accurate. Absent some great deflationary pressures, which I don't foresee here in the near term, that would absolutely be correct. The costs will continue to rise, and we will still need to address this at some point. Okay, so moving on, then we wanted to talk about our policy option packages. And we do have a large number of policy option packages, 27 in total. We talked about these in phase one as well. 21 of the 27 are continuations. So they are policy option packages associated with work that was begun in previous biennia. Six are new. None of those six new policy option packages are license funded. They're all generally federally funded, and we'll go into the details here. So for the continuation POPs, and if there's great detailed questions on these, Mr. Chair, I may need to seek assistance, or I may not, but I'll just give you that warning right now. continuation POPs, we have POP 118, which is a continuation of a federally funded voluntary access and habitat incentive program, increases public access to hunting as well as improving wildlife habitat. We have POP 103, which is the Columbia River Fish Management and Reform, subject to much discussion in the previous biennium. That is a continuation, I believe that's federal fund, but that should not be federal fund. That is a combination general fund and other fund funded POP. Continues our work on implementing the Columbia River Fishery Reform actions, as well as evaluating alternative fishing gears and improving and increasing production in the Columbia River off-channel fishing areas. We have a Sage-Grouse Initiative POP 105, which is a general fund, continuation of a general fund funded POP. This does work in cooperation and partnership with private landowners to improve sage-grouse habitat on private lands.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would just remind you that this is what was put in Senate Bill 5544 that was approved by this committee last week. So this POP you probably would not be seeing in the ODF&W budget since it's already been approved in another vehicle.
Thank you. Willamette Wildlife Mitigation Program, another continuation of a federally funded POP. The state under Governor Kulongoski signed a long-term agreement with the Bonneville Power Administration settling the impacts or the settling the mitigation needed for impacts associated with the Willamette River hydro system development. And so we have a POP to continue that program. Continuation POP 124 is a continuation of a project we're working on with the Idaho Power Company, where Idaho Power is has a proposed new transmission line, commonly referred to as Boardman to Hemingway. We do have one staff person that Idaho Power is funding to work with them on that project, so we're asking for a continuation of that. Blue Mountain Fish Habitat Restoration, again, a continuation of a federally funded project working on fish habitat in the Grand Ronde Basin. POP 106, another federally funded Mitchell Act. The Mitchell Act was initially passed, I believe, in 1937, and it directs mitigation for the Columbia River Hydropower System. At that time, it was, of course, just Bonneville Dam. Well, Bonneville and Grand Coulee, but this mitigation was for Bonneville. We have a continuation POP to spend those federal funds associated with the Mitchell Act mitigation. Marion Forks Hatchery Complex, working with the Corps of Engineers, they have developed, designed, and constructed an entirely new Minto collection facility on the Santa Am River, just downstream from Detroit. And we have a federally funded POP to continue our work at that complex. POP 108, another Idaho Power Company funded program, which continues production of hatchery fish associated with mitigation for the Hell's Canyon complex in the Snake River, and that production occurs at our Irrigan hatchery. Fish passage and screening, another continuation of a federally funded and other fund POP relating to maintenance of fish screens in Lake County. And I think lastly, on the continuation side, we do have a other fund funded POP associated with the Portland Harbor injury assessment at $100,000 continuation. Oh, I guess I wasn't done with continuations. I still have some more. As we've talked a lot about our increases over the last several years of Pittman-Robertson-related funding, those are the funds associated with sale of arms and ammunition. We have a continuation POP of $7.7 million to continue to spend those PR funds in a variety of wildlife-related programs, ranging from deferred maintenance at our wildlife areas to habitat restoration at many of our wildlife areas, as well as expanded and improved science as it relates to big game management. We have a continuation of a federally funded POP, again, another Pittman-Robertson related activity, which expanded our hunter education program, provides for temporary staff to conduct our hunter education. One of the primary constraints for individuals who want to, youth in particular, but also some adults who need to participate in a hunter education course, is our hunter education instructors, which number about 500 statewide, 200 to 300 that are extremely active. But at certain times of the year, primarily up to and preceding hunting season, they they have other activities that they need to do, and many youth want to take hunter education courses in the late summer and fall. So we've actually hired instructors. It's been very popular to be able to provide those resources and those activities at a time when our volunteers are not able to provide it. As well as this POP continues to work on digital and printed media to help recruit, retain, and reactivate hunters. We have a continuation general fund, other fund funded POP relating to coastal and lower Columbia River salmonid monitoring, as well as a continuation POP 113 relating to recovery plan implementation. So we have, as I mentioned earlier, many listed salmonid species. They're listed under the Federal Endangered Species Act, and we have POP 113, which is a continuation of implementation of those activities. Similarly, continuation of a federally funded POP relating to coastal Chinook research and monitoring includes rolled up in this POP lower Columbia, Willamette, also Oregon chub, which was, we talked about in phase one, the first fish in the nation that was ever delisted here in Oregon. Work continues on that, as well as in Northeast Oregon and some of our sensitive fish species, Blitzen River redband trout. POP 115, continuation of Deschutes River Basin fish monitoring and recovery, again federally funded, continues fish population monitoring in the middle of the Deschutes, and works on development of a habitat conservation plan in the upper Deschutes Basin. Two POPs related to our work in the Coquille Valley. Continuation POP, $369,000 related to habitat restoration and enhancement on the wetlands property that we own in the Coquille Valley, as well as tide gate replacement. We're working with the Beaver Slough Drainage District to replace the tide gates in that drainage district with fish-friendly muted tidal regulators. So moving to new POPs, not continuations, but new POPs. We have POP 104, which is a Klamath anadromous fish reintroduction plan. As you all know, the Klamath Basin, there's great changes underway in the Klamath Basin as it relates to the hydropower facilities there and the potential for new access to historic anadromous salmonid habitat. We have a $200,000 federal grant to begin planning for implementation of reintroduction of salmon and steelhead in the upper Klamath. POP 120 is a really good story. We worked with the Oregon Department of Transportation. When any time the Oregon Department of Transportation does maintenance activities or construction activities on their culverts, it triggers Oregon's fish passage law, which requires that fish passage be provided at those structures. We worked through our commission on a administrative rules for a pilot program with ODOT that would allow them to conduct routine maintenance activities at their culverts without triggering the fish passage requirements. And in exchange for that, they have funded the department with one position and a significant infusion of fish passage related investments, which we are then putting towards priority fish passage projects in the state. So really looking to spend the important resources related to fish passage in the areas where they provide the most benefit, while at the same time allowing ODOT to do routine maintenance and hopefully avoid catastrophic failures of culverts, which are not only bad for infrastructure and bad for budgets, but also bad for fish. POP 130 is a sage-grouse mitigation coordinator. Another activity that our commission is working on right now is completely revamping our habitat mitigation rules as it relates to sage-grouse and sage-grouse habitat mitigation. We essentially will be developing in some form a mitigation bank associated with activities in sage grouse habitat. And POP 130 provides a position, a general fund funded position, to implement that mitigation program. And policy option package 132, another general fund policy option package, governor's office policy option package, would provide one position and $1.35 million of general fund for working on pre- and post-fire resilience as it relates to sage-grouse, working, implementing on-the-ground activities to mitigate and provide resilience for these populations in, is a key piece in our efforts to prevent or hopefully avoid the listing of sage-grouse. Willamette Falls Fish Passage. We have a fish ladder at Willamette Falls. It's somewhat highlighted here in the photo, although not exactly, but the fish ladder is associated with the industrial structure on the west side there, which would be the westland side of the Willamette at Willamette Falls. The facility was built in the early 1960s. It's an incredibly dynamic environment, as you might imagine, particularly at high flows. And we are seeing a substantial issues there as it relates to undermining and erosion of the footings. So we have a $1 million federal fund policy option package. We are still seeking those funds to hopefully address the ladder and maintain it. All the listed salmon and steelhead populations in the Willamette Basin, of course, use that fish ladder, at least when the sea lions aren't camped out at the mouth.
Mr. Chair, so what happens if we don't get the federal funds for this?
Co-Chair Rayfield and Senator Dimbro, if we don't get the federal funds, we will continue to limp along addressing near-term issues as they arise without the kind of the global solution, if you will. So we have a project there right now where we're working with a contractor to do some short-term shoring up of the facility, if you will, and hoping for a long-term, you know, more global solution.
And the funding for that is coming out of the general fund, or?
Well, this is a federal fund policy option package, so we're aggressively
right.
seeking
but,
federal
but
funds.
But I mean the maintenance that you're doing now, the sort of smaller projects. So, I mean, would this relieve you of some other burden that you otherwise would have?
Yeah, Chair Rayfield and Senator Dimbro, I off the top of my head, I don't recall what fund source we're using for that. It may be operational. We do have some mitigation dollars associated with the facility from PGE, but we'll follow up with you on that question. POP 128, which we discussed earlier. Any additional questions on POP 128 at this time? Okay. And Mr. Co-Chair, that concludes my presentation, my formal presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any other follow-up questions? Yes.
Going back to the slide that Senator Hansel asked you about, you know, the $1.2 million federal funds. So I don't know if I heard you answer him or if he asked it, but the $1.29 federal, is that money we already have, or do we have to do something to match those dollars to get them here? And if it is money we already have and you didn't use it on this, what else could you use those funds on?
Sure. Co-Chair Rayfield and Representative Parrish, these are federal funds that we already have.
Okay.
They do require a match. We are using the match associated with the Ruby Pipeline mitigation as the match for those federal funds. In terms of what could they be spent on, they could be spent on other wildlife-related projects. So they are, you know, they are wildlife-specific. We can't use them to fund a fish hatchery or a hatchery research center. They can be used on other wildlife-related projects, provided we have the match.
So you buy the land and it gets incorporated into a wildlife area. What's that mean for the sort of average person, do they get to go use that space? Oh, yeah. Is it hunting space? Is it camping or hiking space? Like, well, what is it? And if it wasn't in a permanent acquisition of land, which has a long-term value, certainly, but if it was going to be for something else, I mean, when you say you can use it for other wildlife things, is that going to be like some one-time expenditure that's doing wildlife protection? I mean, like, what else does that look like? I'm still trying to wrap my head around that.
Sure. I'm Co-Chair Rayfield and Representative Parrish. So our wildlife areas, generally we do not allow camping, but we do allow hunting, and we do allow wildlife viewing. We do allow fishing if there's, you know, if there's fish access sites. All of those things will be allowed at this site. Public access is one of our key and fundamental pieces of our wildlife areas. We don't acquire wildlife areas with the intent of prohibiting people from going there. We acquire them with the intent of providing that access. We've had great support from the hunting community on this particular project, as well as from the conservation community, you know, supportive of this project. When I'm trying to remember the second part of your question, so we've had broad support from the hunting community. Oh, I
second part
that.
Of the question is, if you didn't use it on an acquisition of land, what else does that get used on? Is it a one-time sort of other use that you could use it on? Or, and the other thing I'll sort of wrap into this, is this like an actual piece of property that somebody owns that you're trying to acquire? Like, who owns this? How big is this piece of property?
Sure. Co-Chair Rayfield and Representative Parrish. The property is large. It's 10,000 acres. It is currently privately owned. We're working with, it's been on the market for several years, I think three years or so. When we talk to the hunting community in particular, one of the things they always support, and they support strongly, is access to hunting areas. And this one, if you're familiar with the Deschutes Canyon, there's not a lot of public access from the west side in this area. So they've been strongly supportive. What was the third part of your question?
What else would you do with the money?
Oh, right.
And is it one? What else you would do would be another one-time use? Because this is sort of a long-term use. Because I'm assuming once you buy this land that there's going to be some cost then in future maintenance of this land that's not currently in your budget. I mean, buying the land's one thing. It's like buying a house. Right. The next thing you know, you got to paint it and put a new dishwasher in. And I mean, there's like other stuff that goes into the maintenance of a piece of property like this. So do you have a sense of what it's going to cost you and where you would pay for it to do the upkeep on 10,000 acres?
Yeah. So this would be what we would call one-time dollars. And a big piece of the package, as I mentioned, the $1.29 million is about a little less than a third of the total cost. So we have the one-time monies associated with Ruby Pipeline mitigation, as well as the monies, that the private monies, which have been raised and provided for this acquisition. So this piece, it's a federal grant. It's one time. It's not, you know, we can't guarantee that it'll be there 10 years from now or 5 years from now. With regard to the ongoing maintenance, certainly there will be some cost. And we, as I mentioned earlier with Senator Hansel, we would be looking at using our existing staff that work on the Lower Deschutes Wildlife Area as well as the White River Wildlife Area. And probably some small expenditures associated with controlling invasive weeds. But we don't expect it. We don't have grand plans to build new facilities here or to, you know, put new structures. There's no houses on the property now, and we don't expect to change any of that. So relatively small long-term maintenance costs.
Lastly, if you add 10,000 acres into your portfolio, you and you might have mentioned it way early on in a different slide on a different day, but how many acres effectively does that bring you to in terms of what your the assets that you're managing for the state that are publicly available like this for hunting and fishing and whatever?
Co-Chair Rayfield and Representative Parrish, we currently own, I believe, about 230,000 acres across the state. So this would be in addition to that.
Are there any other questions? All right. right.
No, sorry.
Colleagues, oh yes, Representative Gomberg.
I should have been more vocal. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, I wanted to go back to the reductions in the Fish Division relating to shellfish. This past week, if I'm not mistaken, there were two closures announced by your division, and I'm wondering if these closures had been in effect, what your reaction would have been to those shellfish issues in this particular context. Did my question make sense?
So, Co-Chair Rayfield and Representative Gomberg, you're referring to the North Coast domoic acid issues recently?
Yes. I think you folks and the Department of Agriculture announced elevated levels of toxins triggering enclosures.
Right.
If we had, if these reductions had been in place, would you have been in a position to respond to those issues?
Co-Chair Rayfield and Representative Gomberg, this particular position would not change our ability to respond on the public health as it relates to our regular testing on the North Coast beaches for domoic acid. So this would be a proportional reduction in the shellfish program focused mainly on our population assessment. So one of the great benefits of the shellfish program and the obligated revenues that come associated with it is we're actually able now to evaluate shellfish populations up and down the coast. Of course, we don't do every estuary every year because we can't afford to do that, but we are evaluating estuaries. This would this reduction would affect our ability to continue to do those population assessments, but not the public health related evaluations.
All right, thank you.
Are there any other questions? Ms. Connolly, is there anything you'd like to add?
Chair Rayfield, no, not at this time.
Mr. Chair, I would just note that the tomorrow's hearing is going to be in hearing room C for Senate Bill 247, which is the fee bill for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. It'll be public testimony.
And with that, we will go ahead and close the meeting and adjourn. Thank you. Thank you.